This is the PSA Podcast, where we deep dive into the business of technology and automation.
Hey, Joe Redding. Good to see you again. Another exciting show and interview, huh?
Absolutely. Yes, I'm looking forward to this one. So today we'll be discussing the business and technology behind collaborative robotic automation solutions. And we're joined by Tim DeRosette from Brooks Automation, one of PSA Systems technology partners. Tim is the director of product at Brooks Automation. And prior to joining Brooks in 2017, Tim held various executive positions for global companies like Yaskawa Motoman Robotics, Aethon, and Jabil, where he was responsible for evolving products in industrial automation. So today, a little bit about Brooks Automation. They are a leading provider of collaborative automation solutions with over 40 years of experience in the semiconductor industry, specializing in precision robotics, integrated automation systems, and contamination control solutions that empower chip manufacturers worldwide. So Brooks's mission is to automate the mundane and free employees for a more meaningful work. And we're going to explore this in more detail today. Marty, how's that sound?
It sounds good to me. I hope it sounds good to Tim, to our guest. I hope that all sounds good to him. I hope, you know, so I'm going to be listening for the most part, but go ahead.
Yeah. So Tim, pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us. I hope I didn't butcher your last name there.
No, you're good. Okay. Hi, Joe. Hi, Marty. Good to connect. Good to be on with you guys today. Thanks so much.
Yeah. So we're happy again. Happy to have you on the BizTech Podcast. Thoroughly honored to have you here as one of a representative from one of our technology partners, Brooks Automation. So before we get into some of the technology and business behind Brooks, can you just give us a little bit of a historic background of, you know, how you got into the industry, you know, a little bit about yourself, and then what led you to Brooks Automation?
Glad to, I've been in the industry for well over a couple of decades, and in fact, to be precise, I joined a company called Adept Technology back in 1988, and so gives you a bit of how long I've been in the industry, and had a number of positions with Adept. They were a startup. I think they started up in 1984, but one of the leading robotics companies at the time, building robots for precision assembly and high speed assembly at the time, and developing SCARA robots. But one of the things that had a number of positions there, from a field service through business development, teaching some of their training classes, all the way through product marketing and leading their marketing. But one of the things that resonated with me at that point was getting in front of customers and trying to solve customer problems, and that's been a theme throughout my career that I really enjoy. And I worked with a number of different companies, as you had mentioned, Joe, at the beginning, and all of my career has been around robotics and bringing automation or robotic products to market and solving customer problems. I did take a 5-year detour there at Jabil, where we were focusing on additive manufacturing. It was former colleagues of mine from Adept that pulled me over there. And great company, great time. And it was exploring a parallel technology in additive manufacturing and 3D printing. And then I joined Brooks in 2022. So thrilled to be here and be on your podcast today.
Yeah, great. So storied history there and background in automation. So I'm very familiar with Adept. Back in my ABB robotics days, certainly competed against them in the early stages. And I remember back then when ABB first developed their flex picker, the IRB 340 at that time, they actually used the Adept controller for that in order for the motion control.
Used the Adept controller for many years and then developed their own, brought that in-house and your vision, so in ABB's vision. So yeah, it's quite a system. Yeah, very nice.
So, okay, so now you're at Brooks, and tell us a little bit more about Brooks, because they evolved, from a history of working with some other robot manufacturers, and I think some of the guys were even at Adept. Is that true, or am I getting that mixed up?
Yeah, Brooks. Brooks has been around for about 40 years, and predominantly producing robots for the semiconductor industry, whether it's vacuum robotics and systems. Reticle handlers and cleaners and stockers. So a lot of the things that support semiconductor manufacturing, all the way through advanced packaging and automation. So if you think about everything that we touch throughout the day that has silicon in it. That has been handled by some of Brooks' content, by some of Brooks' automation. So that's our core business. And about 3 years ago, they acquired Precise Automation, which was a small lab automation robotics company, collaborative robotics company out of the Bay Area. So they acquired Precise. In fact, Precise Automation was founded by Brian Carlisle and Dr. Bruce Shimano, who were also the founders of Adept. Back in 1984. So you kind of see a common theme running through that. In fact, Brian Carlisle is still with the company. In fact, he's leading the what we refer to as Precise Collaborative Robotics. He's leading the group under Brooks. So still going strong.
So Precision Robotics, that is the collaborative robot platform that you guys have. So that would be the brand of that, correct?
Yeah, we refer to the product line as Precise Flex. And that is what used to be Precise Automation Robotics. Yeah,
great. So tell us a little bit more about the leadership team that they have there at Brooks or Precise Automation, and that what it really attracted you to? Was it some synergies there that attracted you? So tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, it really was two things. It was I've always felt that prior to the acquisition that Precise Automation had some unique technology, and quite frankly, we're making the best collaborative robots on the market. And I've watched them since their founding, and stayed in touch with Brian, but they were really laser focused on lab automation. So they weren't well known outside of lab automation. But with the acquisition of Brooks, and Brooks' objective, of course, is to grow that business. And even though it's still a small part of the overall Brooks business, Brooks is investing in the team. We've doubled the size of the team since the acquisition, and we're investing in marketing and really to get the message out about what we're able to do and the technology we have with our collaborative SCARA robots.
So tell us a little bit more about Precise Flex, okay? Because I think it's a unique offering. It's different than, maybe somebody listening to the show thinks mm-hmm. of a collaborative robot. They may think of, more of like a six-axis robot that's like a traditional style. But tell a little bit about Brooks, because I'm familiar with it, but I don't know if all the listeners are. So what's the unique features about the Precise Flex robot offering?
Yeah. So if you think about, and for those of us who've been in the robotics industry, there's been a fair amount of innovation over the years, but it's been largely incremental innovation. It's taking what is an articulated, six-axis articulated robot, and it's incrementally made them better, more precise, made them faster, made them, driving the cost down, improving the software. But it's all been, for the most part, incremental, with the exception of, you mentioned the Delta robot, right? That was a unique innovation that was separate. So there's been a handful of what I would call real true innovation within the robotics industry. Now, on vision and software and perception, there certainly has been a lot of innovation in that space the last few years. But when it comes to the mechanisms, the robots themselves, they're largely the same as they were 30 years ago. They're vertically articulated. They have some type of gear reduction, and they are lifting the robot, the arm against gravity. So they're vertically or gravity loaded arms. So for that reason, they need gear reduction in order to be able to lift the arm as well as the payload. And the approach that Brian and Bruce took as they founded Precise Automation was, let's make a robot that is, that the weight ratio of the robot to the payload it's carrying, make it much more efficient So one, it's a SCARA robot. So if you're familiar with SCARA robots, our robots are SCARAs. We have a tall Z axis, a column that moves up and down, but the horizontal axes we don't use harmonic drives in them. We use either direct drive motors or belt drives. And that means that they're very low reflected inertia, very low collision forces when you think about it relative to other collaborative robots. An analogy I use, it's maybe not technically accurate, but if you imagine someone hitting you, if you ever played wiffle ball, and you imagine someone taking a wiffle ball bat and just swinging it and hitting you in the shoulder, it might sting a little bit, but it's not going to, cause any bruises, certainly no broken bones. And then you take an aluminum baseball bat and swing that baseball bat and hit at the same speed and hit you in the shoulder, you're going to cause some damage. And that's a comparison I like to use to visualize reflected inertia. Precise robots are like Precise Flex robots are like the wiffle ball bat, and other robots have a lot of inertia. And in order to be collaborative, you have to slow them down, right? So that's a couple of things that are, we think, pretty unique about the Precise Flex robots.
Yeah, that was intriguing to me when some of your representatives, Darren, who came to our facility up in there in Duryea, where they showed us that, and actually being able to touch, feel, program them, and then actually stick our, with the SCARA, how they kind of come across one another, sticking our hand down in between that and just at full speed, you're right. It stops on a dime, no injuries, no hurt.
Yeah,
it was just funny. Come on, try it. And everybody's unsure about it, but.
Well, it goes counter to everything it goes counter to everything you've thought about robots over the years, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So what type of application solutions are really being targeted for this type of a robot? Like, can you get into some of them which are, been your bread and butter, but some that maybe you're looking to transition to?
Yeah. Yeah, so we sell a lot of robots. We sold thousands of robots into lab automation and benchtop, but also full tall, large systems. And now we sell robots, we sell products. We sell through partners like PSA Systems and other system integrators that deliver the solution. So that's one thing. But we sell a lot into lab automation. It's drug discovery, next generation sequencing on the front end of drug development, where we're handling samples. And so we do a tremendous amount of that, even into clinical a bit. If you go to the doctor and have your blood or sample taken and send it off to a lab to have it tested, could be that our robots are used to handle those samples. In terms of manufacturing, we see an opportunity in electronics test. So if you can imagine a robot in a lab loading a plate of samples into an instrument, that is a very similar application to loading an electronic PCBA or an assembly into a tester. All right, it's largely a very similar operation. So we see a significant opportunity in electronics test, even up to heavier payloads, upwards of 20 kilograms, handling totes, moving totes around. And our robots have a very compact footprint, and they're also, because they have the vertical column workspace, they're able to reach into machines or racks or shelves at the top of the work envelope, which can be upwards of 1.5 meters, and all the way down to the bottom. So rather than a spherical work volume where if you're in the middle in the sweet spot, you can reach in very well, but up top and up the bottom, you're more restricted. And our robots make use of all of that space in terms of footprint.
Right. And that's because of that E column, right? That you traverse down, and you're able to use that SCARA style as you traverse up and down. So yeah, it makes it real easy. And I think about maybe like stocking shelves or pulling orders from shelves, like that pick to light. If I remember correctly, the power requirement to run these robots is very small. And in fact, it'd be very easy to put these on like AGVs and things of that nature. Can you expand on that? Because I think that's another differentiator of your product.
Yeah, power consumption is, people are starting to think about it. Back to the wiffle ball bat analogy, we're moving very low inertia. So our motors and our drivetrain, if harmonic drives, for example, you lose about 15% of your power through the transmission, right? And we don't have any of that. So we're able to, one, be much more efficient with the size of the motors, and we don't lose it in the translation or the gear reduction. Our robots, our large robot, moving a 10 kilogram payload, it might use 200, 250 watts. And our smaller robots can get by with, typically moving horizontally, 70, 80 watts, power. If you really start working the Z axis, we are lifting the arm up and down, it might be 100, 150 watts, depending on the payload there. So that's important. In fact, we have a graphic showing our test floor where we have a test stand running six robots at speed, and they're all waving around. And it's plugged into a terminal strip with 110-volt outlet.
Wow.
And no. I don't think anybody else can say that.
Wow.
And to your point on mobile, that's a nice to have if you're plugging into the wall. Low power consumption is nice, but if you're working on mobile platforms, and we probably have 50 robots out in the, we have well over, actually approaching 200 robots out running around on mobile platforms. And they're very, we say that you get 30% more utilization on your AMR platform, which is huge for mobile.
Yeah, Joe, if I can jump in, because that impresses the heck out of me, because as you know, Tim, and so does Joe, the idea of electrical consumption with artificial intelligence, with sensors all over the world, with the Internet of Things, it's the demand on our system is huge. And is some point, some people think, to the point of breaking. I don't know if that's true or not, but geez, I'm seeing that as such a significant part. Mm-hmm. I guess from your marketing standpoint, that's a hell of a story that you just shared. Yeah, wow, yeah. Blows me away.
Yeah, we think it's compelling, and we're getting more and more interest, particularly in mobile, because it is so critical. And then the other thing that we have with our Z column, we have a much better center of gravity. So if you can imagine putting a six-axis articulated robot on a mobile platform and then reaching out over, you're moving the whole arm, and your center of gravity is higher. You have to be careful of not tipping. Whereas our robots, the center of gravity is over the base of the robot, the AMR, and much better utilized. And then the other piece is all of our controls are embedded into the robot. There is no external controller. So that's also, it's good in general for all applications that you don't have to deal with this
right
controller box to figure out where you're going to mount it and enclose it. But certainly, again, it's critical for mobile applications.
Yeah, and I'm thinking of the word, excuse me, Joe, I'm thinking of the word innovation and what you're describing, which I'm going to oversimplify my definition. But innovation is just coming up with something, an idea or a product that has never been seen before. That's new. That's innovation. Now it can be incremental or it can be obviously exponential. And but that's true innovation that you're describing. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, Joe. I'm sorry.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's good. And that kind of is a good segue. Like the next thought that I had is, because you are the director of product, Tim, right? So, along those same thoughts, how do you continue to ensure that Brooks moves forward and adds products and offerings that they can expand into maybe new markets or new offerings? How do you guide that ship?
Well, that goes back to one of your earlier questions around culture and the leadership team at Brooks. Dave Jarzynka, he challenges us every time we're in a conversation or in a meeting. What was the last time you what customers have you visited and what have you learned? And he really challenges all of us not to spend time in the office or in my home office here. in Oregon, but be out in front of customers. And that's certainly something that gives me energy. And you know, I've heard it said that the answer is rarely within the office, right? Being out in front of customers, understanding what they're trying to do and what is unmet need that they have today. And an example of that came about a little over a year ago was thinking about vision and how much machine vision has advanced over the last 10, 15, 20 years. And I've always thought, and this wasn't my idea, but I've thought for a couple of decades, that if you could simply take a camera, not unlike the one that you have in your cell phone or smartphone, and embed it in the robot and teach the robot to see. So one of the things that we've done, we spent the last year and a half doing, is embedding, we have servo grippers that attach to the robot and make it very easy and fast to deploy robots. But what we've done recently is embedded vision, 2 5-megapixel cameras into the gripper to, one, make it easy for integrators and partners like PSA Systems to deploy our robots when you need vision. And we've added functions, and we're layering software functions on top of that. For example, we have auto teach that we can use Aruco markers or labels that you put in the work cell, and you could use that to automatically teach the robot. And it, for complex systems, it just saves tremendous amount of time, right?
Yeah, that, we got to see that as well. Moving fiducials around the table and robot automatically going over, finding that key feature, and then being able to reteach itself to that datum. It was staggering. I liked it. And then we also took a look at applications where you maybe a cart that you roll up and you don't really need to dock it, because traditionally, what do you need to do? You need accuracy, right? Precision of location. So just roll a cart into an open space, and then the robot comes in again using that vision to find that feature fiducial and then recalibrate itself to the entire work surface. Again, your technology that you have that makes it easy for, you know, solution providers and integrators like a PSA to implement, it's just resounding. And to think you can do all that and somewhat power these robots, like using as much power as a light bulb, for God's sakes, it's crazy to think about, you know?
That, I got to say it again, that blows me away. I mean, no, I'm not an expert like you guys, and on the periphery of a lot of this stuff, but I'm reading about this all the time, and obviously it's a big point of the big part of the discussion with everything that you guys are involved with. But that kind of blows me away. You know, let me ask you another question, Tim, because this lends itself to it, as the idea that when you're going to prospects or customers, and obviously you're going there and you're asking them some version of, well, what do you need? You're asking them some version of that. How often do you, because you have to, you also recognize that they don't know what they don't know. And so how often do you bring the idea, the new ideas, the innovation to those prospects? Again, you do want to know what they say they need, but often they don't even know what they need sometimes. Is that accurate? And how do you address that? I'm fascinated by your approach here.
Yeah. Well, there's, a lot of times people are, they have a problem that they're struggling with today, and particularly in manufacturing and production and even in lab, and they're thinking about the constraint that they're dealing with today, and that's what's at the forefront of their mind. And they're not thinking necessarily about what's the broader picture. Now, some are, and they're quite innovative, but what I like to do is spend time walking the line, talking with the operators, and understand from them, what are the things you hate doing, right? And often it's the things that operators hate doing that are difficult, that are opportunities for us in the, maybe not this year, maybe not next year, but in the future. And as you visit more and more customers, you can start to piece together and see a pattern and identify, just like, you know, companies hate reteaching locations. If something changes in the work cell and they have to reteach locations, it's gotten a lot better, but it's still, you know, trying to crawl into a work cell with a teach pendant and looking at it. It's like, well, let's take away the teaching, right? And that's kind of how that, one of the thought streams that led us to, embed vision and come out with auto teach. But it's really, you know, stitching together a pattern and try to understand what are the challenges that, and Likewise, a lot of times you'll solve something for one market that absolutely is applicable to another market.
Great.
You're right, and that's kind of when we look at your product, our guys immediately are starting to think, okay, so maybe your core focus is semiconductor, maybe electronics testing, and maybe electronics assembly. But we started brainstorming and thinking, where else could we use this technology? Because really is fantastic. And there's so many selling points that you can just go up that ladder of selling points to really point in your direction. So, you know, all this goes, this whole conversation really kind of wraps it up, Marty, this whole philosophy of automating the mundane, right? And freeing employees for more meaningful work. So certainly their products and their offerings are staying tried and true towards this philosophy or this core mission. What do you think?
Excellent. Yeah. Good. So what's next, Joe? Success stories?
Well, I'd like to just have an idea, like, what's next for Brooks? I mean, where do you see Brooks going in the next, you know, 5 years, or where, you know, in the next generation or so? What's happening?
Yeah. Well, we think that we've just begun to scratch the surface in terms of, you know, adding more value to the robots. And we think about around the periphery of the robot, you know, what is additional value that we can bring. When we think about, Marty, you mentioned artificial intelligence, right? And there's a lot of hype around that. There's a lot of good work as well. But we also think incrementally around machine vision and edge learning. In fact, we're incorporating edge learning into some of our vision tools to make it easier to teach, to do a comparison, a quick presence absence. We have a clear check tool. So we're really thinking about that, and also unique ways of grasping problems or grasping products with different grippers, and what are more methods over the next 5 years or more ways that we can deliver more value, not just because, quite frankly, the manipulators themselves are a commodity or quickly becoming a commodity, right? You look out at all the collaborative robots and I think Universal Robots has done a phenomenal job in that market and built that market. But you look at how many, what I would call copycats to that is on the manipulator. So, and even for us, even though we have a unique configuration, we have folks trying to knock off our robots and copy it and offer something that that maybe is less reliable or what have you. But so we've got to continue to innovate, and what's additional value that we can deliver. A couple of other examples would be our collaborative linear rail. If you need to extend the work volume of the robot, we have a linear rail that goes up to 2 meters. It's collaborative. You simply bolt the robot on it, and it extends the reach of the robot. For a lot of applications, that's a good fit. So we're going to continue to innovate and try to figure out how we can make it easier for Joe and his team to deploy our robots. And from my view, it's all about time. As a system integrators, schedule is critical. And if you can deliver more systems sooner and faster, you can scale your business. If it takes more time, it's a slog. We're really on a mission to try to figure out how can we deliver more value, and how can we accelerate the time to what I call time to production?
Yeah, bingo. You hit the nail on the head, because that's very important to PSA System, that we have partners that have that value add solution portfolio for us to take advantage of. So just to your point, so the speed to commissioning, the speed to that FAT, right? And that's very, very important. So we certainly appreciate that. So yeah, I do like to, we're going to probably wrap it up here. And at the end of all of my podcasts, we like to talk a little bit about a success story. So do you have something that you can share with us of a success story?
Maybe not one particular success story, but several, is the interest that we're getting in the what we call IntelliGuide vision. So embedding vision into the gripper. We brought that to a show, and we had a number of customers beta test it last year. And now they're really clamoring to get their hands on it, and the orders are coming in for that. So there's a lot of interest around the vision, and dovetailing that with mobile. We've done a number of mobile applications where we're also using the vision for micro-localization. We talked about that a bit, and some of those are in manufacturing as well. So I think that you know, kind of leave it at that, but we will be at, if I can put a plug in for Automate, coming up week after next. Yeah, we'll be at, we have a booth, just look for Brooks Automation at the Automate show and come by and visit us.
Oh, fantastic. So where can they get a hold of you again? I mentioned it earlier, certainly your website, www.brooks.com, correct?
That's correct. You can also find Brooks Automation on LinkedIn. Reach out to us on social as well, and I'm there, on LinkedIn. So that's always a good place. But definitely reach out on our website, certainly.
Awesome. Hey, well, Tim, I really appreciate it. Marty, thank you once again. This has been great. Very informational for sure. So thank you.
Thanks, Tim. Real pleasure to meet you, and great, great, great discussion. So thanks so much.
Yeah. Marty, thank you. Joe, thanks for the invitation. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Thank you for listening to the PSA BizTech Podcast. The PSA BizTech Podcast is a production of Production Systems Automation. More information on this podcast and PSA can be found at psasystems.com. That's psasystems.com.